Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. 7 o'clock on a Saturday night. And as usual, that means it's time for The Other Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain.
And I'm not. Hi, folks. It's John Hogue here on the other side of the studio table from Stacy. Actually, it's the dining room table, but that's because we're operating out of an undisclosed location as usual. Stacy, by the way, has a blog called The Other McCain.
TheOtherMcCain.com, that's correct. And you can find my good friend John Hogue's work at his blog, HogueWash.com.
We're not going to push the blog that our wonderful Diana publishes, but if you're interested in not-for-profit governance, she's really a go-to person.
She
Hi,
really
Diana.
Is.
Hey there. I also can help with 501c4s, but I warn you, I am a stickler for separating your 501c3 activities and your 501c4.
Well, that would mean that there's a certain operation in, well, actually, what I was going to refer to lost their 501c4 status for failure to file paperwork. So, see, that's the reason why it's important to dot the I's and cross the T's in these matters. Stacy
will bite you.
Yes. Stacy, we did our sporting segment last week. About the Ranger competition. And we didn't get to the end of that by the show last week. So bring us up to speed.
Yeah, we were hanging in limbo last week. It was Saturday night. And we had not yet seen the results of Saturday's in the best Ranger competition at Fort Benning, Georgia. Where my son, Robert Stacy McCain Jr., a.k.a. Bob, was competing as part of Team 41, along with his partner, Andy Kopis, who is senior NCO in the Italian Special Forces and stationed here stateside training U.S. Rangers, but anyways, so the status that we were dealing with last week was that they had completed the they were halfway through the second day, and they were on beginning night orientation, night orienteering,
Correct.
Which is a land navigation,
and it's so much fun in places like Fort Bragg and Fort Benning. Let me
tell
you,
out there in the woods, and anyways, and so So with a compass and a map, and it was
fortunately the last time I had to do that, it was me and another Eagle Scout.
Okay. Well, anyways, so the best Ranger competition was called by the brigade commander. The Super Bowl of the Army. And by the way, the brigade commander there is Colonel Dunmeyer, Colonel Antoine Dunmeyer, who is an alumnus of South Carolina State University. Now, imagine making it all the way up to Colonel, commanding the Airborne Ranger Training Brigade. Colonel commanding brigade, right?
Right.
And not just any brigade, but that brigade, and out of an ROTC program at a state university.
Well, you know, I have an interesting story that somehow relates to that. When my mother went to Middle Tennessee State Teachers College first. Mm-hmm. Then she transferred to Tennessee Polytechnical Institute. But when she was at MTSU, as it's now called, she was the homecoming queen.
Ooh, your mother was the homecoming
queen. Well, she was also the homecoming queen in high school, and she was the homecoming queen at Tennessee Tech. So, but the homecoming king was taking ROTC, and he actually went into the Army after graduation and wound up serving with my father in the Second World War in Europe, and then wound up serving with my father again occasionally. Their careers would intersect when my father would do active duty for training at Fort Bragg. So then he wound up as the professor of military science at Vanderbilt while I was at Vanderbilt. And so the guy who used to date my mom was the professor of military science when I was in ROTC.
All right. Small world. Well, anyway.
But no, but I mean, you can make it from a, to colonel from a, and with a good assignment from a state school.
Yeah. Well, anyways, Colonel Dunmeyer called it the Super Bowl of the Army. And I had not realized, by the way, Bob was saying, hey, I'm going to be in best ranger. And I didn't realize what a big deal it was. But they did not win. However, they went the distance. And that's the thing, is that it starts out with 51 teams. Okay, and after the first day, they cut it down to 28, and they made that cut. At that point, they were in, I want to say they were in 19th place. Anyways, but they were doing pretty good after the first cut. But the question was whether they were going to make the second cut, because they went into the night orienteering phase, which is where we were last time. They were in 17th place, and so they had to move up one place. And so I was all over Facebook. And by the way, Colonel Dunmeyer actually told my son, said, your family has been blowing up our Facebook comments. so but our whole family was in the comments on the videos and stuff, that they were live streaming some of the stuff.
Bob's uncle's a former paratrooper from the 101st to the 82nd Airborne.
Yeah, I mean the whole family was cheering him on, and they made it through, and we got to see, and I posted on the blog theothermccain.com. You can go over there. The name of the post is Not All Heroes Wear Capes. And you can see a picture of Bob up on the rappelling rope. I guess that's what he's doing there. And then there's a picture of Team 41. And then there's video of them on the Combat Water Survival Assessment, which is the next to last event in the competition. And you see him, he goes along, and what they do, by the way, is they take them in a helicopter. They drop the team into the water with a sack, okay, a rubber bag. And I don't know what's in the bag, but they've got to swim ashore with their gear. And then they go through this exercise where they have to walk along a beam, like 40 feet above what's called Victory Pond there at Fort Benning. And but anyway, so that's what my kid did last weekend. What did your kids do last weekend is how I finished it, because of course very few people have weekends like that. They went 62 miles in about 60 hours.
Yeah, but having been a soldier stationed in Georgia, I would have referred to this as the Masters.
Mm.
Okay. It's an even tighter cut than just the Super Bowl.
Well, the thing is that they push them to exhaustion. Okay.
Well, yeah.
Part of what Ranger training is about is about going without sleep and just going. And, you know, they were able to get, you know, a few hours of naps during the course of this, but that's all they had. And so they pushed them past the point of exhaustion to see how they function under stress.
Well, I mean, this is common for special ops. It's the same sort of thing that the SEALs do, where you might go through a week of intense training as part of the, you know, getting qualified, and you might get 3 or 4 hours sleep in a week.
I mean, they just, because the idea is to see how you function under stress.
And well, I was in the Signal Corps. And, you know, the Rangers have a motto of the Rangers lead the way. And our motto when I was in the Signal Corps was, call us when you get there. You're laughing, but the reason they could do that is because we went there ahead of them and put their phones in.
Okay. Well, anyways.
Well, I have a friend who swears he turned his cat into a Ranger. So... what can I say?
His cat?
Yeah, the cat got himself locked out on a balcony while my friend and his girlfriend, now his wife, were away for a weekend. And while there was limited water, there was nothing to eat. And, of course, it was cold, so the cat couldn't go to sleep. So when they got back, the cat, who had always been just a lovely little cat, suddenly turned into, whenever somebody pushed him, it was on. It was really bad. And my friend swears that he turned the cat into a Ranger.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, you see what...
By the way, Bob finished the thing despite the fact that, and we didn't know it at the time because they're kept incommunicado. They, you know, they have to... They can't have their cell phones with them or anything during this thing. But we didn't know it at the time, but you know, like in the very first obstacle course, Bob wrecked his knee. And so he completed this whole thing on a bad knee. And when it was over with, he went to see the doctor on Tuesday, and the doctor said it looked like it may be a torn meniscus.
Oh.
But they'll have to, they're doing an MRI on it next week, but they, you know, so he's got, some work to do just to repair the knee, but going the distance on a bad knee, that's the way we do it.
Stacy, there are some people who should not be messed with, and we should be thankful that some of them are on our side.
Yeah.
On the other hand, one of the other things that these guys have to do is shoot incredibly well under pressure.
Speaking of shooting well under pressure,
There was a cop in Columbus who actually did a pretty good job, but we'll talk about my analysis.
He didn't miss, is the point.
Well, but we'll talk about my analysis of that later. Meanwhile, you posted something a little bit, right after the event.
I got ahead of it. Yeah. Yeah, well, no. You're getting ahead of the game. We're talking about Makia Bryant in Columbus, Ohio. And everybody has seen this video by now, plus the driveway video. Makia Bryant was a 16-year-old who, for some reason, and this hasn't been fully explained yet, was living in a foster home with her younger sister. Mm-hmm. And we now know that what happened was there was an argument. The foster mother was at work, and the older sibling, one of the older step foster
kids,
had come to the foster home, and they were wanted to do something. It was the foster mother's birthday. And wanted to have the house clean. And so this older sibling, foster sibling, was angry at Makia and her little sister because their rooms were messy and they weren't doing any housework. This argument turned into a situation, everyone's seen this video, I should hope by now, where Makia comes charging out of my house with a 6-inch blade in her hand, a kitchen knife.
Looks like a chef's knife, yeah.
Yeah, and she comes charging out, And we don't know who the woman she tackled is, or the first woman she went after. She said, "I'm going to stab the F out of you, bitch." Okay. And then this woman falls over on her back. Okay. And Makia then turns to the other woman. You've seen this, the one in the pink. But meanwhile, by the way, a man comes up and kicks this woman in the head. Okay. I don't know what's going on.
Yes.
Yeah. The first woman gets kicked in the head by this man. We don't know. The cop has just shown up on the scene. I mean, he gets out of the car and it's chaos. It's madness. Okay. He got a 911, you know, there was a 911 call. Help, they stabbing us over here. There's a, you know, so the cop drives up and he arrives in the middle of this chaotic scene. And he's like, get down. And then Makia, we now know to be Makia, with the knife held underhand, by the way, if you will look at it, if you look at the still shot that's not posted, it's called "There's Always a Backstory." Why was Makia Bryant living in a foster home? Over at my blog, The Other McCain. And you see Makia with the knife held underhand, which is what you're doing when you're going to like grab, get somebody's ribs, that underhand grip. Yep. You're going to get them in the gut.
Well, it's the way a knife fighter who knows what he's doing holds a knife.
Yep, yeah, that's the serious way a knife is held.
Yeah, that's serious knife fighting thing. You know, and I noticed that. But it's a freeze frame, and this all happened in a split second. She goes after her with the knife, and the cop fires four shots. And you can look at what he's seeing. Right, this is the freeze frame. This is from his body camera. And you can see the margin of error on his shot, okay, is not large, okay? Nope. And he fired four shots, and she went down. And you know, died right there on the scene. I mean, it was center mass. She was stopped. Well, it's a good shot all day long. It's a good what cops call a good shoot all day long. But the headline was not hero cop saves woman from knife attacker. Instead, they trying to put it in the context of George Floyd for some reason, you know, and it's a completely different situation.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, but on the other hand, look at what happened with that shoot a couple of months ago that you wrote about in Nashville.
Yes. Okay.
So, in that case, the cop was fired on first and returned fire.
I have written before about Nika Holbert, who got shot in let me see if I can't get this right. Let me see when it was she got shot, because I have forgotten now. But it was last November. But when the video came out, you know, I had commented on it at that time. But then John Correa, whose active self-protection channel on YouTube is something that you watch. See, because this back here last fall, you know, like August, September, I started watching these police video channels because I was desperate for some way to distract myself from the election, because it was driving me crazy. Is that, you know, everybody was, look at this poll, Ohio, North Carolina, you know, Florida, you know, who's up, who's down? It was driving me crazy.
Meanwhile, in Nashville.
Yes, and so in Nashville, but anyways, John Correa had this active self-protection channel, and he did the video of Nika Holbert, and he said if you really want to prevent this kind of thing, what we need to do is end the drug war. And I said, no, that's not right. Because
yes, it is.
No, well, you yes say. And no.
Oh, well, you're going to argue with me. Okay.
No, I'm going to set you straight. There's a bunch of stuff that should be crimes and are crimes. There's a bunch of things that are stupid, and nature makes them a crime, but there's no reason for society to lay on additional punishment. And the drug war, at least as currently configured, is so incompetently done that it's time to end that.
Well, now, wait.
Go ahead.
I will agree that the drug war has corrupted policing. I will agree with a bunch of other things that the libertarians go down the list of. However, the second that drugs become de facto legal, you have San Francisco.
Thank you.
And that's the problem. Everybody else's quality of life goes to hell. If we could if there was some way that we could let addicts go to hell their own way without it impacting anybody else, maybe we could just ignore it, but we can't, because junkies steal anything that's not red hot or nailed down. Those who still have half a brain show up equipped with oven gloves and a crowbar.
One of the things I do is I work with people who are in recovery.
By the way, you could say, for the matter of fact, that you podcast with someone who's in recovery. But
but I'm a recovering Democrat myself. But no, really. But, alcohol and prohibition was a societal problem. The problem with the drug war is it's modeled too much on the war we lost against alcohol. Mm. And I'm not saying that society needs to welcome drug abuse, but what we're doing now isn't working. But and there are differences between drunkards and addicts for the most part. Yeah. Matter of fact, if you go to if you work with people in recovery long, you'll find that one of the sayings that becomes common is the description of the difference between an alcoholic and an addict. Both will steal your wallet, but the addict will help you look for it.
to continue going, we're going to
getting back to active self-defense.
Is that one of the things, I got off on about a 1,500 word rant about
and
this.
I enjoyed it.
Thanks.
And it was very well written and very thoughtful. It was just mistaken in a few points.
No. Look, there are basically two kinds of people in the world. People who agree with me and people who are wrong. And John, you're just wrong on this. And I talked about this. I went on at some length explaining that. Let me tell you something. When I was working for the Washington Times, I would occasionally go to like Heritage Foundation events and Cato events and things, lectures and panel discussions. And I would sit there, and when the topic was crime, okay, I would sit there in the audience say, why am I not on that panel? I'm more of an expert about the criminal mind than any of these people because I used to be a criminal. Okay.
Well, but were there no politicians on the panel?
But the point being
that's
that
a different kind of crime.
But the point being that my adolescence, okay, was spent there are very few journalists or pundits in Washington, D.C. who have the kind of direct experience with crime and drugs that I do, okay? And so I look, this is why I have no sympathy for criminals, because I was one. Okay. If I had gotten myself shot to death after when I was out running around as a long-haired teenage dopehead, if I'd have got myself shot to death, there wouldn't have been no hashtags. There wouldn't have been no rallies. There wouldn't have been no protests, because everyone in my family would have said, well, that's what you get.
Stacy, you're white, aren't you?
Yes.
But the
point being that, that nobody would have thought it was an injustice that the cops killed me if I'd have pulled a gun on a cop, which is what Nika Holbert did.
Well, not only that, she shot a cop and he shot back.
Right. I mean, if you watch this video, and like I said, it's up on the blog. It's called Nika Holbert, The Drug War and the Importance of Penalizing Stupidity. Yes. Okay, because here's the thing. If you never have to deal with serious consequences of your stupidity, you're going to stay stupid. Okay?
Yes. Well, nature is a very harsh teacher.
Yes. Well, the Darwin Awards Committee could not be reached for comment.
Well, in fact, quite frankly, I work with people who are in recovery. There are people who don't want to recover, and you have to let nature take its course.
And it's sad to do that. When I was in my 30s, I working as a small town reporter and covering schools, I would go to the schools and talk to the teachers and stuff like that. And I'd have a chance to observe some of their classroom. And I'd look at about half those kids and I said, they're doomed. Okay. I mean, there were kids that I'm sorry, you talk about a few fries short of a happy meal. I mean, they were not the sharpest tools in the shed. And you wonder what's going to happen to kids like that who just ain't got the brains to do anything,
that is a real societal problem, because let's face it, half of us are below average.
Of us particularly. Our listeners, our audience are all far above average.
But yeah. That's a Saturday night show from Minnesota that isn't on it.
Oh, okay. Yes.
But anyway,
wasn't there some sort of Me Too with that guy?
Anyway, yes, the Keeler. Anyway, the thing is that it's gotten to the point now that there's roughly 10% of the population that doesn't have the intellectual capacity to deal with the modern world. And we're going to have to figure out what we do for and with these people.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, there are other people that don't have a problem with
As I pointed out, in the post, okay, mm-hmm. is that what's going on in our education system is the cult of self-esteem, okay, which is a causal error. They fail to understand the difference between correlation and causation. And I talk about the fact that how extraordinarily intelligent our readers are, including some of whom actually designed space robots for NASA and drive German cars. Okay. Now, I have a very small sample to deal with in this regard, but my point is, driving a Volkswagen will not make you a scientific genius.
No, but and having an IQ 4 standard deviations above average will not make you wise.
Correct.
I know people who are in that low 10% in terms of intelligence quotient that we were talking about that still have a lot of wisdom. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And common sense.
Yes. And so,
which is very, by the way, common sense has become exceedingly rare in this world.
Well, I'm not going to go there.
I've managed to acquire some over the years, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, you had enough common sense to get the hell out of San Francisco.
Well, and she, apparently she's had enough common sense to stay out of Omaha. It's dangerous.
Ah, Omaha, Nebraska. Yes, this was my post today. It's right now. It's at the top of the blog, theothermccabe.com. Video, a death in Omaha. This video was just released this week, and it didn't become national news quite the way that some of the other shootings we have talked about did. But it involved a guy named Kenneth Jones, a 35-year-old convict who was only released from prison in May of 2018. So less... barely 2 years later, in November of 2020, he was riding in the back of a Dodge Charger at 7 o'clock in the night, about a week before Thanksgiving. And the driver was seemed to be impaired. And so the cops pulled them over. And there's this thing, if you watch these videos enough, okay? If you watch these videos enough, you get used to this thing that the cops are like, you know, he's moving around. The driver or who, the person in the vehicle is moving around and apparently trying to grab something or hide something in the car. That's always a bad sign. Cops are trained to look for that. And so as soon as they got out of the car and said, everybody hands up. Well, there were three women in the car, all of whom raised their hands. But Kenneth Jones, who was sitting in the rear seat behind the driver, Kenneth Jones didn't raise his hands. And the cop walks up and puts the gun against the window and says, I got my effing gun right on your face. Mm-hmm. Stop reaching. And they kept telling him, stop reaching. So finally, using a flashlight, the cop bashes out the window of the car, reaches in, opens the door. They drag him out. A scuffle ensues. And one of the cops, and if you read the full report, it's remarkable, or watch the video. Mm-hmm. The cop says, he's got a gun, you know, and he's saying, gun, Rich, because he's afraid this guy's about to shoot his partner. Mm-hmm. And it was, and they had just seconds, okay, the situation, and they opened fire. Now, if all you saw was this video, and by the way, the media in Omaha, Nebraska, had to, you know, go to court basically to get this video released. They didn't want to release it because if you watch it and don't know what's happening, it looks like a bad shoot. Okay.
No, but it is pretty graphic.
Yeah, but it is in fact a good shoot, and the grand jury, after looking at it, hearing all the testimony, concluded that, you know, they didn't have a choice. I mean, you know, this was a life-threatening situation. This guy had a criminal record, of course, a felon in possession of a firearm. And like I said in the blog, you can read it. If you watch these videos enough, You learn to recognize this as a classic situation. Felon in possession of a firearm. He knows that if he gets caught with that gun, he's going back to prison, right? Mm-hmm. And this causes him to flee, attempt to elude, resist arrest, and these guys get shot dead. You mm-hmm. can't help it. You know, this is...
The thing is that folks keep thinking that what they heard on the Lone Ranger radio program, where the Lone Ranger shoots the gun out of the other guy's hand, right?
Yeah, right.
That ain't the way. Well, it is the way radio works, but it ain't the way reality works.
Yeah, they expect him to do some kind of Bruce Lee, Chuck Norris, Batman sort of thing. where you can shoot somebody, shoot the gun out of their hand or whatever. And I'm sorry, when it's life or death, you aim center mass.
Yeah.
Right. And I've had the experience of putting several rounds into someone's center of mass and still having them not go down. And while I was reloading, a friend with a rifle solved the problem for me.
Mm-hmm. That was in Vietnam.
As a matter of fact, it was.
Our good friend, the Kong.
Yeah. Well,
I think this guy was in VA.
In VA, yeah.
But the point is that you now as soldiers, you're probably going to shoot to kill, mm-hmm. But civilian police and someone engaged in self-defense, you know, in their home or whatever. What you're trying to do in the case of the policeman is stop what's going on so someone can be taken into custody. What you're trying to do if you're defending yourself is stop what's going on. Absolutely. Maybe the guy will run away. Maybe you'll kill him. But what you're interested in is stopping what's going on, and then you're done with it, right? Mm-hmm. Let the cops deal with all the paperwork. So what you need to do is what is going to stop what's going on with the smallest amount of risk to you and to innocent bystanders.
Yep.
That's why.
Which, by the way, is something that these idiots going on and on about how the cops should have shot her in the leg or some other nonsense. A leg that is moving from the distance from which he was shooting. Your blog post was absolutely accurate. Yes, if you're standing and you're shooting at a target, maybe. But in the situation, no. No.
Yeah, well
not only that.
You had recently
not only that,
out at the training range. You have actually been training with a pistol.
Mm-hmm. Well, but not only that, I've seen people with leg wounds bleed out very quickly when the femoral mm-hmm. artery is severed. So, you know, it's dangerous to bystanders. It's and mm-hmm. it's anytime you shoot at another human being, you're shooting with the possibility of death.
Yep.
Okay. So you're using deadly force by definition. Deadly force can only be used in very limited circumstances, and it has to be used with the greatest of care. And that's
immediate, imminent, unavoidable.
Right. And with without endangering others. Mm. And this the idea of a warning shot, well, where the hell's the bullet going to come down? Right?
Yeah, right.
What's it going to hit? You know? So anyway, I'm done with that. But you know what? We're at that point in the show where we stop shooting at people and we turn to begging.
Okay, folks. That means that it's time to talk about the yellow button. Folks, mm-hmm. if you will go to my blog, theothermccain.com, you will notice that near the top of the center column is the yellow button that has the word donate on there. If you will click the yellow button, it will take you to my PayPal account where you can contribute to the support of the blog and also to the support of the podcast, and also mainly, however, to keep my wife happy. My wife likes it when I make money off the blog. So you can think of this as the keep Mrs. McCain happy fun. And by the way, we are coming up in just a few days on our 32nd wedding anniversary. So if you would go to my blog, click the yellow button, put $32 in there and say, happy anniversary, Mrs. McCain, I will pass your salutations on to the wife. Meanwhile, over at my good friend John Hogue's blog, Hoguewash.com.
Well, Let's see. I don't what special day is coming up. Arbor Day is coming up, and my wife, my late wife, who to whom I was married for 37 years, 3 hours and 52 minutes. She died on her wedding anniversary. Arbor. She was chairman of the Fair Carroll County Forestry Board on the governor's Sustainable Forestry Commission. So, if you'd like to make an honorary a gift in her honor on Arbor Day, which is the 30th, $37 would be well spent in support of the blog. Or you could, if you click on the icon of a tip jar at Hogwash, you'll be taken to my PayPal account where you can make a contribution. Or you can click on the icon that takes you off to the Hogwash store and buy all sorts of interesting trinkets branded in various ways related to the blog. Or you can use the Amazon shopping links that you'll find at Hogwash or the other McCain or other places around the internet. If you use those links, the blogger whose blog you're going through as a member of the Amazon Associates Program actually gets a small commission on the transaction, which is a good way of supporting all kinds of bloggers. Please do that. But regardless, please remember the five most important words in the English language.
Hit the freaking tip jar.
Indeed. Now, you see, when that stuff comes in, though, to the through PayPal, I have to keep track of it because Hogwash operates as a business, and so all this has to go on my Schedule C. It's a sole proprietorship. And I have to make sure everything adds up. Now, I have the disadvantage of having learned arithmetic from Mrs. Craig back in 1953, and she was very certain about the fact that 2 + 2 = 4. Apparently, this is now considered racist. There's a post I linked to over at Legal Insurrection this week about woke math and the danger it has to the way our children are being taught. And, you know, people are up in arms about this quite justifiably.
Yeah.
But I have, because this has to do with the nature of reality and the nature of truth. Mm. You know, 2 + 2 = 4, and it really is. But, you know, we have these neo-Marxist idiots in the education bureaucracy and as teachers who are really trying to mess things up. I've come up with what I think is a reasonable suggestion to deal with the issue. Why don't we calculate the pay of any teacher or education bureaucrat using or promoting woke math on the basis of 2 + 2 = 3.
Yeah, that would
the
that
cries
might wait
of for... indignation.
Yeah. On the other hand, part of my experience in my checkered career is as having been the chief technical officer of several organizations. It's interesting some of the things that go on in some of the C-suites at various companies. Bradley Gayton was hired by Coca-Cola as their general counsel, and that's their top in-house lawyer. He was let go this week after only about 4 months on the job. In late January, Coke sent out a letter to all their outside legal houses that they were dealing, law firms they were dealing with, demanding that those law firms engage in illegal racial discrimination and assigning lawyers to work for Coke. Now you're thinking, hold it, Coke's in Georgia, so they must be insisting on all white. No. Mr. Grayson is black. And the letter said in part, outside counsel commit to providing Coca-Cola with self-identified diversity data, including American Indian or Alaska Native, Asian, Black, women, Hispanic slash Latinx, LGBTQ plus, Native Hawaiian or other Pacific Islander, and persons with disabilities for Coca-Cola's quarterly analysis of diversity of teams working on Coke matters. And basically, there were some other requirements about promotion within the firms and that sort of stuff.
For each new Coca-Cola matter following the revision to the guidelines, you commit that at least 30% of each billed associate and partner time will be from diverse attorneys, and of such amounts, at least half will be from Black attorneys. Work performed by diverse attorneys is expected to be accretive to their development and advancement at the firm.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's absolutely illegal.
Absolutely. Yes. This is called set-asides, by the way.
But it's basically setting the kind of racial quota and hiring that is illegal. By the way,
unconstitutional.
Yeah. Anyway, Grayton is no longer general counsel at Coke.
No.
Wonder how that happened. He will spend the next year as a strategic consultant to the company. Mm-hmm. On his way out the door, he's getting a $4 million one-time bonus and $666,666 a month. In consulting fees, when I'll bet you his consulting work is pretty light.
Actually, I guess that the best thing Coca-Cola could do is pass every idea by him and do exactly the opposite. I mean, that would be actually probably safe.
the interesting thing is that Coke hired this dude away from Ford. So, I mean, it's not like the guy has no experience. But you know what? He certainly got nice work if you can get it.
Oh, yeah.
The thing about this and what people don't understand, okay, and what is not made clear in discussions of these kind of quota regimes, which is what they are, they speak of diversity, and when they talk about diversity, they're actually talking about quotas. We have seen this, by the way, in the admissions at Ivy League universities. Yep. Once you start doing lawsuits that get you discovery to find out what's actually going underneath this, you know, rhetoric about diversity, they're setting up quotas. Now, why are quotas wrong? Okay, let me explain something. Okay, the white guy that's at the top of the organization, the white guys in the C-suites, right? The executives who've already got their jobs, right? Okay, it doesn't affect them. Who it affects, right, is the younger people coming into the organization. And when you say that X percent of, you know, of the new hires or whatever, okay, must be of, you know, diverse, right? What you're saying is that those jobs are not available to white people.
Well, it's worse than that.
What?
It's worse than that.
Go ahead.
What you're saying is that it promotes it makes people look at each other as you only got this because it institutionalizes an us versus them mentality. It's not hey, I didn't get that job because this lady was better than me. It becomes, well, they had to hire her, didn't they? It's really ugly, it's really stupid, and it needs to go away.
Well, you know, in Scandinavia, where we probably have the least amount of gender-based hiring and that sort of stuff, but freedom to choose what you want to do, women tend to go into helping professions, and men tend to become engineers. I wonder why that is. Maybe it has something to do with natural inclinations. You know, there's not a big difference between men and women. It's probably 60-40 on some sort of things. But, you know, at the tail end of the distributions, that has a huge effect of you run out of men for this or women for that based on statistics. Imagine what would happen to the average American hospital if you required them within the next week to have 50% of the nursing staff male.
They're going to be
the problem. The problem, and this is what you know. The problem is that when you start breaking people down into groups, categories, right? And you know, so you start counting noses, right? Do we have the right percentage of this or that group? Okay, and then you say that anyone who is skeptical of this regime must be motivated by racism, right? It's like you know, I do not for a moment doubt, okay, that there are women who are excellent engineers.
I work with several of them.
Mm-hmm.
The question is whether on the large scale, you know, viewing these two large categories, right, whether, you know, the top engineers, among the very top engineers, whether you're going to have a 50-50% distribution. And if you don't, right, if you don't have it, is it, you know, sexism that explains that? And obviously this is not true. Let me give you an example of what you would call diversity or affirmative action thinking, quotas even, right? To where I think it matters, okay, is that policing, okay? If you know that, because of the crime problem in the black community, you're going to get a lot of calls from the black neighborhoods, okay, in any community. So it's very important, okay, that they make an effort to recruit black police officers, okay, so that at least, you know, that when they call for backup in a black neighborhood, that, oh, hey, we better send car 47 over there just to make sure that everybody knows there's no racism going on here. And it's sad that you have to do that, but it's same thing is true in journalism. Okay.
The whole thing is to see how people who are playing the diversity numbers, how they operate. Back in the 90s, I was hiring somebody while I was working at a large government contractor. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of resumes came in for position. And it was just one guy who's just had an outstanding resume. And I said, let's bring this guy in. And he came in and I said, this is the guy I want to hire and let's make him an offer. And they said, yeah, this is great. He's black. I said, well, yeah, I knew that before he came in. And they're going, what? And it's like, how many white guys do you think graduated from Tuskegee Institute in 1965?
Yeah.
You know, did you read his resume? And the point is, I didn't bring him in because he was black. I brought him in because he had been in the Air Force and had intimate knowledge of the program we were working on, right? It's like, duh, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, it was a completely merit-based hiring. But boy, did the HR department think it was the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Oy. Yeah, we made our numbers, you know, and it's Oy. Sad that we have gotten to this point. It's just sad. But anyways, we are running way behind, John.
Yes, we are. So I'm going to quickly bring people up to date about Rebecca Jones.
She's lying all over the place.
Well, yes.
Mistaken.
Folks, who is Rebecca Jones?
Rebecca Jones is the former employee of the Department of Health in Florida who was fired for insubordination, and he's tried to blame the whole thing on the idea that it was the governor trying to mess things up with the COVID reporting. She has filed a peace order against Christina Pashaw, who has written a post about her in Human Events. If you go to Hogwash.com, there I did basically a post about her every day, week before last. And there's three posts there about various false reports that Jones has put out on the interwebs related to the cases with Ms. Pashaw. I highly recommend that you tune in over at Hogwash and take
the comments are lit, man. looking at this, they've got someone is scripted a Zoom call with Brett Kimberlin, Debbie Frisch, and Bill Schmalfeld. Oh my God!
And Rebecca, yes, he needs to go kill the dogs. When he gets back, I'm going to make him talk about his post about the Chauvin trial, because we need to dispose of that matter before we let the week go down. So, yeah. Stacy, Chauvin's guilty?
Yes, he is guilty as a matter of law. Everyone saw it this week. He was convicted on all three counts against him, and I don't know how that's going to work out. He was convicted of murder, and manslaughter. I don't know how that goes under Minnesota law, but it was a big win for the social justice crowd. And I was expecting riots. I thought we were going to get riots, and it didn't happen. And
I'm happy that there weren't riots. Really, I am. But
I was shocked. But anyways, Nancy Pelosi had the quote of the day: "Thank you, George Floyd, for sacrificing your life for justice." And she had to kind of walk that back a little bit.
You think?
Yeah. But you know the. The thing about this is that, anytime Ben Crump wins, okay, it's a loss for our nation. I don't like that guy. I don't know. He's the heir to Al Sharpton, Ben Crump.
Yeah, well, you know, this whole thing has been absolutely insane. And Stacy, I believe we mentioned from time to time that crazy people are dangerous.
Crazy people are dangerous. And this week, the folks in New York got a lesson in how crazy people can be and how dangerous they are. A woman with a hatchet went on a rampage in Manhattan on the Upper East Side. I'm going to just read it to you. From the Daily News. An axe-wielding attacker chopped a woman's leg, took over a magazine store, and locked herself in an elevator during a bizarre Upper East Side rampage. Hang on a second. Monday night, police sources said, the surreal scene unfolded in an apartment on East 85th Street at York Avenue about 8 p.m. when the attacker got into an argument with her 28-year-old victim. The victim and suspect knew each other and were at a mutual friend's place when the 22-year-old attacker used a small hatchet to hack a gash into her right shin, sources said.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so The woman then climbed out of the apartment
obviously
window.
Obviously New York needs to do a better job of axe control.
Yes, axe control. Yes. The woman then climbed out of the apartment window and used the fire escape to get on the building's roof. Somehow, she made her way back down to ground level and rushed into international news and magazines on East 86th Street. The clerk told the news the woman grabbed two packs of cigarettes and told him, "These are $30. I'll pay you back." Video shows her milling around inside the store and grabbing something from the counter. Quote, "I know her as a customer. Her palms were covered in blood. She had an axe," said the clerk. Quote, "She came into my store and said, 'Help me, they're coming to kill me.' She kept talking about the cat, they're going to kill the cat." He said he ran outside terrified and called the police. "She was a very nice lady," said the clerk. "I can't believe she did this. We used to talk about stocks." Oh, the clerk even started serving customers at one point.
What?
Yeah, the clerk joked nervously, "No doubt we're going to hire her." The woman got on an M86 bus, but got off after a single block, police sources said. She rushed into an apartment building on East 86th Street and pleaded for the doorman there to help her. She said, "Hide me." I said, "No, you have an axe," the shocked doorman told the news. Then she ran into the elevator and locked herself in. Well, anyways, it took about 20 minutes for the emergency service unit of NYPD to take her into custody. I'm going to guess that it was not only craziness that was involved here. I think it might have been some substance abuse involved.
I think so, too, because, yeah. Wow.
Wow. But that just goes to show you, folks, crazy people are dangerous, and I hear the boogie-woogie piano in the background, which tells me that we're nearing the end of the show, and so we will be back here 7 p.m. next Saturday night for the other podcast. Thank you for joining us, Diana.
Anytime.
And we'll catch you all next week. Good night, Diana. Good night, Stacey.
Yeah, well, all right, then. We'll talk to you later.
All right.